Welcome to the Success Sensei Podcast for anyone interested in success, happiness, and balance. We'll teach you how to be a black belt at life. And now, your host, former professional fighter, multiple world champion, entrepreneur, and investor, Robert Devan.
Bowing in, this is Roundhouse Rob, the Success Sensei, helping you to improve your life one kick and punch at a time. And today I'm going to be talking about how to be a great coach to people around you. So be a great coach to those around you, your loved ones, your family and your friends. So what do I know about being a great coach? Well, I've asked some coaches. Of course, I've been involved in coaching for over 25 years, and I'm sure my peers would argue that I'm not a great coach, but I've been doing it kind of this long, and I've had some really good results, and I've had some great students, and I've brought people all the way up to black belt, and I've made international competitors and world champions out of some students. I've been involved in coaching a long, long time. I've coached myself a lot in karate to world titles and kickboxing and professional MMA. And not only that, it's not just about high level competitors or anything like that, or high level athletes. I've coached so many, well, in air quotes, normal people towards whatever goals they had in their life, their weight loss, their fitness, their martial arts goals, whether it was getting their yellow belt or getting their black belt. There's a huge gambit of reasons that somebody would actually take up martial arts. And you're very involved with them in their life, helping them to do that, especially in the path of martial arts. Coach is the word that I'm going to go with. But coach slash instructor slash mentor slash teacher slash, I don't really like guru because that's a little bit, I'm on a pedestal. And I mean, the coaching skills are martial arts skills or fighting skills. They're just skills. A lot of people, you know, put you on a pedestal because they think, I don't know what they think, but they put you on a pedestal, or they put fighters on a pedestal, or they think that they're some type of a higher evolved human being. But it's just a set of skills that you've learned along the way. Same with every other set of skills. So to be a great coach to the people around you, just before I get into how to be a great coach, all of us are coaches. All of us are teachers. All of us from time to time will want to pass information to those that we care about, and we'll want to help them along because we all have information and we all have ways of helping our family, our friends, even people that are looking for help, and maybe strangers, people that we have all have the ability to be able to do it. So how do you be a great coach? How does it work? Right. Well, the first thing is your motives. So if you're trying to be a coach because it's going to be a super massage on your ego, then you're already going at it the wrong way. Your coaching or your helping or your teaching should be based on the outcome. So it should be on your results. That should be where you get your ego boost from. The results that you produce. Not the fact that somebody is looking up to you as the coach or the sensei. That's me. or the guru or the boss or anything like that. None of that really matters if you can't actually get the results from the person that you're trying to coach. And we're all going to coach. We're going to coach our kids playing games or teaching them things and reading them, or all that life learning skills. We're going to be operating as a coach with our kids. We'd even be coaching our parents, especially in the digital age, and they get confused over certain things. And you're going to be teaching them. My day will come when hopefully my kids will watch this or listen to this, and they'll be able to coach me in the things that I don't understand. So we're all going to be coaching various different people throughout our lives. As I said, your friends, you could be meeting your mate down in the pub and he needs a bit of help or he needs a bit of coaching. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a classroom, doesn't necessarily have to be in the dojo, doesn't have to be in a park, doesn't have to be in a pub, could be in a conversation, it could be. Coaching takes so many different forms. And basically we're talking about teaching. All of us are coaches and all of us are going to want to pass on information and help the person that we're talking to. So that's the whole objective to keep in your mind. You're trying to teach them something that they're going to develop from, that they're going to learn from, and something that they can use to help better them. For no other reason, only that it's going to help them. Not as an ego boost in and of itself. I am this coach and I am only really credible if I am bestowing all this knowledge on somebody else. It doesn't work like that. If you're going to think along those lines, if it's going to be a massive ego boost, then I don't think that you're not going to have the person that you're communicating with. You're not going to have their best interest at heart. And you're not going to be able to deliver that information. So you have to be a good coach, to be a great coach, you have to be a little bit selfless in the process. I know a lot of, I won't mention names, but I know a lot of martial arts clubs. I know a lot of martial arts instructors, and their particular gyms or their dojos or their clubs are shrines to themselves. That's the reason why they got into the game. They 100% run it as an ego boost. And I'm not saying it, there's so many good ones out there. But if we're being honest, we know people who operate like that across. It's not just martial arts. I'm sure it's in absolutely everything. I'm sure there's dictators in absolutely every sporting endeavor. I'm sure you can go to gymnastic clubs around the country or swimming clubs, and there's coaches who it's more important how they're viewed and what they think of themselves and that they're revered than the actual information that they're passing on. So you have to be a little bit selfless. You're going to have to figure out what motivates your student, we'll call them, your client, your customer, your student, your friend, your family member. If they're, you know, if they learn more visually, if they learn more through hourly or orally, or they learn from simply doing it and repeating it over and over. It helps if you can figure that out pretty quick, because then you can relay the information. You can draw a picture instead of saying it, or you can simply demonstrate it and have them copy you, like monkey see, monkey do. That tends to be pretty popular in the martial arts world. Monkey see, monkey do, backed up with everything else. But I like to teach, when I'm teaching martial arts, I like to draw a lot of diagrams as well, depending on what I'm teaching, because I think that can help a lot of people, depending on what way you manage to identify that the student can learn. So you have to kind of figure out that you have to conform your teaching methods to their way of learning, or figure out what's working best to be able to translate your information. The next way is your style of coaching. So in martial arts, traditionally, there was two different types of styles. There was military style and there was family style. So military style generally came from the hard styles of martial arts like karate. It was generally of Japanese origin. They would be more the military style. So where there was very much a structure, a hierarchy structure, training would be a little bit more firm. Everything had to be exact. As you can imagine, it's a little bit more military based. The Chinese styles then were a little bit more family orientated. So while there was still a hierarchy, the emphasis was a little bit different. I come from family martial arts. That's the background I've always done across the board. So it's the one that I identify with the best. I don't like punishment training. Never have liked, you know, if you do something bad, do two laps of the pitch, or, you know, that was never my way of coaching. And it was never what would work with me, because I would just go the opposite way. I would just be really stubborn. If I had a coach that tried to shout or get a point across in any way like that, it just wouldn't work for me. Even if I felt the club was good for me, I just wouldn't be able to train in that environment, because I wouldn't be happy. So that didn't particularly work for me. It was encouragement that worked for me. So what I'm trying to say is, basically, you convey your message with love, right? Was that really hippie-ish of me to say that? But you actually have to care about the person you are coaching. If you don't care about them, it's going to be very, very difficult. Anyone that knows me knows that I prefer teaching one-to-one classes. My gym runs group classes every day. I teach group classes all the time. I like teaching group classes. I don't mind them at all. But one-to-one classes is where I thrive. And it's because I really like to know the person I'm teaching. I like to waffle about all kinds of stuff with them. I like to figure out what they like, their motivations. I like to get to know them. I like them to trust me. I like to trust them. And that's how we get our best results in an environment that you're encouraged. I will try to encourage them doing things right, and I'll try to discourage if they're doing stuff that's wrong. But I won't actively try to find, I won't actively look for them doing things wrong all the time so I can catch them out. Coaching with love. I know that's really strange, but you need to identify some common ground with the person that you're coaching. You need to know what motivates them in order to be able to coach them appropriately. The next step in being a great coach is not to be comparing the person you're coaching with yourself. And that's a hard one because it's human nature for us to go, well, I did this and I was like this. Because everybody is totally different. Physiologically, everyone's totally different. Mentally, emotionally, everything, everybody's totally different. They have different time constraints. They have different problems in their life. Some of them, some they'll tell you about, some they won't tell you about. So trying to compare them to yourself and thinking, I do it this way isn't a way. Certainly, you can get them to emulate certain things, but you have to realize that they're a completely different individual. It is important to us as teachers to conform to our student, to the person that we're coaching, not to make them heavily conform to us or to our beliefs or our way of doing it, not to be too rigid. It's very important that we try to get the best from them because everybody starts in a different footing. Everybody is completely different, has a completely different makeup and mindset. So it's very, very important to get the best out of them. So the belt system, for example, everyone has different beliefs in this, but the belts, When you progress, and if you do a belt systems in martial arts, each belt should be, you should be a better version of yourself. It wasn't a better version in comparison to anyone else. It was of yourself. If you get a yellow belt, you should be a yellow belt in comparison to the white belt that was yourself when you walked in the door. When you get your black belt, it should be a black belt version of yourself in comparison to that white belt, that beginner that walked in the door. It shouldn't be based on somebody else. A great coach will always be honest and say it like it is. Not in a hurtful way, but they'll always say, yes, it's good, or no, that's not quite right. It needs to be done again. They'll be straight up. They won't lie and say, yeah, that's grand, just because it suits yourself. It's very, very important that to get the results, you need to, again, I've already said it, you need to be selfless and concentrate on the actual improvement in your student. Otherwise, what was the point of you coaching? You haven't achieved your objective. Unless your objective was just to give yourself an ego boost, being able to say that I'm better at them than they are because I'm teaching them, which isn't the case. I've seen some memes on Facebook and they've been going around for years, and it's along the lines of, you know, for every 10,000 people that join a particular club or dojo, it'll eventually be whittled down and only one will get a black belt, and you know it's because they persevered and they were a unique person out of the 10,000. But I view that meme, and I understand what they're saying. They're trying to say that it's so hard, you know, only one person out of every 10,000 will get a black belt and persevere. This is what a black belt means, and the black belt is, you know, whatever is elite in comparison to other people, to the other 9,999 people. But I do disagree with it, and I disagree with it because the onus is on us as coaches to improve the statistic. We're doing something wrong. If I take on 10,000 people and only one of them gets a black belt and the other 9,999 people fall off a cliff, fall by the wayside and don't actually amount to anything, I have definitely done something wrong with my teaching methods and my coaching methods. I would not be proud of a failure rate like that. And I guarantee if you were looking for a driving school or you were looking for a college and they had a drop-off rate of 99%, 90%, 80%, if they had a failure rate of anything that was super high like that, I don't think that you'd consider them. You'd want them to be having a pass rate of 95%, 99%. 100% would be an absolutely super sales strategy and marketing strategy and advertising point. Imagine that, going to college, a prestigious college that had 100% success rate, 100% pass rate. That's you'd sign yourself up if it was the subject that you needed the certification in. So in martial arts, we tend to be really proud of always such a high failure rate. And from a coaching point of view, that's a failure on a coach as well. It shouldn't be. Yeah, people might want to do black belt, grand. Some people might drop off, mightn't be what they thought it was, grand. They might do something else, life gets in the way, grand. But we should be making sure that the people that are in front of us, we are maximizing. We're maximizing the benefits that they get. We're maximizing the instruction and the coaching so that they're not just a failed statistic. So they are getting the benefit out of it, and they are getting the maximum from your coaching methods. So it's very important that we look at our failure rates and we look at our success rates across the board. It's not a completely selfless pursuit. Even if you're not doing it, I mean, obviously it's my job. It's been my job for a long, long time. So I've gotten paid to do it. But I did it when I didn't get paid to do it. I coached when I didn't believe that money in martial arts mixed, which I soon changed my mind on eventually, because I realized that to be a good coach, to work 40 hours a week at a job coaching in comparison to just doing it a few hours a week, it was two totally different standards and two totally different experience levels. And then to teach and to be able to do it financially meant better facilities, better equipment, better other coaches as well to join me. Just the whole thing improved. So, but initially I did teach for quite a few years on a voluntary basis, and I would still do quite a lot of voluntary coaching or help out now and again if I can, or I might sponsor, you know, a younger member or someone who might be struggling financially. It's not a completely selfless pursuit being a coach, even if you're not being paid for it. It's not a completely selfless pursuit, because you do get the benefit of you do feel great watching them improve, watching them get better, watching them achieve the things that they never realized they could achieve in the first place, but you actually did. So that's the thing, when you have someone in front of you and they don't realize their ability, but you know their ability, that's where, and then you see them actually flourish and achieve that, that's of massive benefit to you. I mean, that really just makes it. And that particular ego boost is a healthy ego boost. That's absolutely super. Knowing that you were a part of that and you helped bring them on such a level that you could actually see in your mind's eye and they couldn't even envision it. When you're coaching somebody, a general rule and a rule that you should really subscribe to is don't ask your student to do something that you haven't done before or that you wouldn't actually do yourself. So from a fitness point of view, I'm not going to turn around and go, right, 1,000 burpees, go. I've never done 1,000 burpees in a row myself. I'm not going to ask someone else to do it. I've never done 1,000 burpees in a row. I'm probably not likely to do 1,000 burpees in a row. And if someone said to me, right, 1,000 burpees, I'm probably going to find something else to do. So I'm not going to try to get someone else to do something that I wouldn't do myself. And that's something that I would try to stick by, so that my ethics in coaching are... you know, in the right place. I'm not going to ask them to do something that I can't do myself, or I wouldn't do myself, or I haven't done myself at one stage or another. There is a negative side to coaching, and that is sometimes you will coach somebody up from a basic level to one that they're confident, and the confidence can transfer into arrogance, and they end up basically going out on their own, or going into competition with you, or jumping to another association or club. This is renowned across many things. You take on an apprentice and you build them up. They get confidence. The first year they think you're amazing. The second year they think you're okay. The third year they think that you're holding them back and they know better than you, and they might jump ship then at that stage. This happens. You can't let it dishearten you. The ones that do that to you, you just have to let it go, because if you do that, you'll become very cynical, very bitter and twisted, and you won't be a great coach to all the many other people that are going to be loyal with to you for a long period of time. So it happens to everyone in martial arts. I'm sure it happens across all industries. So you can't let that one person or handful of people that might happen to you in your lifetime hold you back from being a great coach to everybody else out there. As a coach, it can be a hard decision sometimes knowing how far to push a student or push a client. They might be saying to you that they want to achieve a certain thing. So then you fully get behind that, you give them all your motivation and you push them hard. So say, for example, somebody says to me that they want to do a competition, and I take them at their word, they want to do a competition. This is just an example. And I say, right, okay, you're going to have to train a hell of a lot harder, hell of a lot more often, a lot more focus, a lot more intent with your training, a lot more intensity. And it's a hard one because sometimes they just say it, but they don't really mean it. And you can see that they're not enjoying the process. And they probably actually didn't really want it at all. It was just an idea that came into their head. So as a good coach, you have to be able to spot that. You have to be able to detect it so that you're not pushing them down a path that they think they want, but they don't really want. Now, that's a hard conundrum for a coach. It's happened to me many a time. People have wanted to compete and do competitions. As soon as they went down that road, I wanted to make sure, obviously, that they were so focused, they weren't going to get hurt, and they were going to be happy with their own performance. So you're pushing them. And then that pushing can be too hard for them because they didn't really want to do it in the first place. Because it totally changes. When you're training for fun and you're training for competition, competition is a lot more serious. You know, it's a game to some people, but to others it's not. It's a very serious endeavor. So you train totally different. You don't just train for fun anymore. So the dynamic completely changes. And a coach would be reckless and foolish to just allow you just train for fun and just to take part in a combat competition. So the intensity does increase, and you can see in some people that they don't really want to do it, though they said they want to do it. So as a coach, you have to be aware of that. People will say they want to do stuff and they want you to coach them, but they're not. They actually don't really. So you have to be able to detect and filter out the ones that actually don't really want to. And that's fine. Not everyone wants to compete. It's not about competition. But whatever their goal is, and maybe they want a lesser version of that goal, and that's fine. So you have to tailor your coaching. It's a hard one to make the call on. When do you push on through harder to get the best results? And when do you ease off and realize these people don't actually really want to do this and change path or sit down with them? Etc. So that's a hard moral dilemma for most coaches. It's my job to teach somebody a roundhouse kick or to teach somebody how to do a punch, for example. And what happens is the people that you're trying to coach will put emotional or mental barriers in front of you. So you end up having to, as a coach, you end up having to deal with a lot of things that weren't the actual thing that you thought you were there to deal with. So if I say to somebody, you know, I'm teaching them how to do a roundhouse, and they're saying to me, I can't do it. I then have to deal with the reasons why they can't. And there could be various different reasons. It mightn't be an actual hip impingement or flexibility issue. I have to discover what is the can't. The can't could be an emotional reason. It could be a mental reason. And I have to kind of go through it with them. So as a coach, you know, even though you're not a psychologist, or you're not a counselor, you certainly will be a mentor, and you will, your job title as a coach will skirt around that of a counselor or that of an unqualified therapist. So you will end up having to help them, if you're going to be a great coach, remove their mental barriers and emotional barriers to be able to get them to do what you are setting out to help coach them with in the first place. So thank you for listening. I'm Roundhouse Rob, the Success Sensei. Life is a fight. You can win. And enjoy. Bowing out.
This has been the Success Sensei, fighting the winning fight. So add us, subscribe, like, and comment. Keep those hands up and keep moving forward.